Before we dive in, two things. First, thank you. Listeners like you are why we do this. Our team works hard on every episode to ensure we bring you the best content possible. Second, it's a gift-giving time of year. People ask us all the time, what's your setup or what's your favorite gear? We put all of our favorites together in our new Generation Leader gift guide. Find recommendations for those hard to buy for people on your list and get them something great this year. Find the gift guide at newgenerationleader.fm/gift and we'll keep this up to date all year round. All right, let's get on with the show.
Welcome to the New Generation Leader Podcast. We're giving you the tools you need to lead in the digital world. Ready to reach your true potential? This is the New Generation Leader Podcast.
Hi, my name is Jim Lee. I grew up in the Los Angeles area with parents that immigrated to the United States in the early 70s. I was born in Korea, but came when I was 3 months old, and I've lived in California my whole life.
My name is Aaron Lee. I grew up in the Mid-Atlantic in Richmond, Virginia. When I was a child, I only knew two Asians, one on my Little League team and one at school. It wasn't until I met Jim later in my career that I began to understand those distinctions in real life.
One of the things that was hard for me to do is to take my personal experiences and see them objectively. As a Korean that grew up in America, my whole life is full of Asian and Western biases that have created cultural differences that are hard for me to identify. By recognizing where those lines are, we hope to navigate through them intentionally and with less conflict and more collaboration.
We know our stories and our biases aren't unique. And throughout our years of coaching, we've found it quite liberating for ourselves and many others to see those biases more explicitly so that we can move more intentionally towards the goals we want to achieve. This is the New Generation Leader Allyship Channel.
One of the conversations you and I have had is, as dads of girls, what it's like to lead our kids and lead our families. And as my kids get older, I'm sure you're the same, watching them at a certain age takes me back to when I was at that age. So I'm watching my oldest head into middle school. Let's take a trip down memory lane to the incredibly wonderful, awkward years of middle school in your life. Talk about what that experience was like. What stands out to you about culture, family experience as you were interacting with friends at that age?
Yeah, it's interesting because that was a time when I was starting to, I think, get a handle between my Korean identity and my American identity. You're kind of like 11 years old going into that age. And from elementary school, where I started out with like one of three Asians, to then adding a few more. I remember in third grade, there was another Korean that came in. Then in fifth grade, there was another Korean came in. So during that time in like the mid 80s, when I went into junior high school or middle school, like all the elementary schools start combining. And so there's a lot more a quantity of Asians in general. And so it's like a mass, so to speak. Right. And I remember at the time, there were other people that were like me. I remember like specifically two other Koreans at the time. So for them, it seemed like there were other people that kind of understood my journey, other people that kind of understood those identity challenges that we would have faced. And there was some comfort there that I didn't have to figure this all out. I don't think it was explicitly our stories were told, but like we could just be ourselves and not feel so odd or left out. And I remember that time being a stage where I think I could be a little bit more comfortable, which I needed. But I think it led to a little bit more what I would say accidental-ish. Like I was swapping back and forth where I wanted to, and they were able to kind of follow along with me because they understand that journey. But when it came to relevancy, maybe again to the mass majority and to everybody else, I think I was still off, so to speak, right? And so I remember like the close friends that I had tended to be those that didn't fit the mainstream. And I'm not saying like the popular kids at school. There's the popular, but then there's the people that get it, and then those that just don't get it because of their life experiences are different in that way. And I think one of the things that for me to reflect upon and understand, and your daughter's a lot older than mine, mine's just turning 5, but like what would it look like as a parent to kind of walk her through that culture? And even though today, like even at kindergarten, it's cool to be Korean, and I think people understand what Korean is. K-pop has really taken over the world in a lot of ways, and Korean drama and movies are are one of those things that like has become a lot more mainstream. Aside from that, I think there's a little bit more intentionality that she has to do to understand that identity, because there's two ways to look at it. You know, again, for me back in sixth grade, I was aware that people saw me differently, but I didn't respond accordingly. That may create that engagement a little bit better. And on the flip side, it's also how I perceived everybody else as saying, well, here I am, my grades are good, so you're doing something wrong, and saw myself, again, the start of that meritocracy a little bit more. Because in elementary school, the grading system was not letter grades. It was just, you got O for outstanding, S for satisfactory, and N for need improvement. So pass, fail, and neutral. But this was the beginning of letter grades. This was like, hey, 90%. If you get an A, your name goes on the wall. I remember my mom during open house would come into my math class and wouldn't see my name on the board. And she'd ask, like, why is your name not on the board? And I remember at the time, it's like, oh, they're really good. They understand it. They're smarter than I am. And she's like, no, that's not the case. You just have to study harder, right? So the reinforcement of a meritocracy type of an achievement and more of an individualized effort versus the ability to engage with the rest of the people in my class.
How did you start to see difference between people, backgrounds, cultures at that age?
Some of the things that were interesting, I said, like, one of the Korean Americans that I grew up with, who is a good friend of mine still today, interestingly enough, he has three older siblings. And I think they kind of had the opportunity to introduce some of these Western culture practices. And so I think he was a lot more accepted into the mainstream culture, but also kind of understood my background. I mean, some of the commonalities that we had is we both played violin. And I remember in fifth grade when we had like a fifth grade orchestra, it was the first time we kind of intercepted. And it was like, oh, hey, it's like, that's us. We had that bond. And so that's the common Asian story that he had. But he also had all these other stories because his siblings were able to kind of introduce him to those Western cultural paradigms. And I think those are like one of those things like, hey, two people are pretty much the same in a lot of areas, but something looks a little bit different, right? So those are some things like I started noticing some differences there. And then like navigating through the values of his parents were a little bit more open to some of the non-academic areas of activities that were going on. Socially, like birthday parties and sleepovers were a big part of it. Like I wasn't allowed to go to sleepovers or like eating over at somebody's house. My parents had a lot of resistance to that. Sometimes like for Asians, it may come off like, why do you have to go to somebody else's house? What do you think, we can't feed you and we don't want them to think like we can't house and feed you, was part of the stigma in that way. So those were hard. Like I didn't get to go to a lot of sleepovers growing up, right? So then that also further separated my experiences and their experiences in that way. I also remember there was this thing called like the GATE program. I don't know if that's like everywhere, but we had this gifted and talented education. So it was a separate program for students that seemed to be more gifted in academia that gave them other experiences. And I remember in sixth grade was when a lot of these like week camps, like we would go into the mountains and there'd be like an overnight camp that we would go. And I think those are like some very eye-opening opportunities for me to see like, how do other people sleep? How do other people like set up travel? And that's the first time I remember like we had sleeping bags. So my parents went camping and stuff, but then like how people packed their clothes and what kind of clothes that they had. Like I just brought the same street clothes, but everybody else had like snow gear because some of them used to go skiing and snowboarding and things of that nature, which is for me as an immigrant was not something that in our lifestyle at the time, it was very foreign for us. So I remember that one year, it was super cool. It was my first time seeing snow, but everybody was ready for it. Whereas for I, like all my clothes are soaking wet because nothing was like snow ready. And again, it's like, oh, why was Jim a little different? Like what was he going through? Those are some areas that like I start recognizing like, okay, I'm still different. Like there's something different about me. But I think also it's one of those things where you don't tend to celebrate it because you're such a minority and you seem like there's something wrong with you. Not necessarily, hey, those differences are just inherent and part of the diversity that you have an opportunity to bring in. And so for when that non-relatability and the inability to understand or like where you don't fit in, I think it's also part of that Asian culture of like you always point out what's different and you stick out. And so in Asian culture, you don't want to stick out like a sore thumb versus I think Western culture can stick out like a sore thumb, but you got to also celebrate that as in terms of like your unique value.
It's interesting as you talked about that because it took me back to, I think, sixth grade. And if I remember right, it was the O.J. Simpson verdict, which obviously when I placed that in my life at sixth grade, I vividly remember one of my classmates, and I know now it was sixth grade because Wilbur was in eighth grade at the time. He wasn't Asian. As I've talked about, I only knew two Asians growing up. And I think Carl had moved to another school for middle school. So in middle school, there weren't Asians in my class. But Wilbur was African American. And his connection to the O.J. Simpson trial and verdict and outcome was very different from his own life perspective, his own viewpoint and vantage point. And so that's probably the first time I vividly remember thinking and seeing, oh, Wilbur's looking at this current event moment from a different perspective than I am. And I don't know that I fully understood it at the time. I didn't have anybody to help me process that as a sixth grader, but I paid attention to it and I filed it away. And since that time, over the last 30 or so years now, have continued to add life experiences along with that, paid attention to and been more curious, as we talked on our last episode about that, being curious about other stories and asking and inquiring, what is it that's driving and motivating this decision or this reaction? Or what are you thinking about when you see this? Now, my daughter's current experience with some of her classmates, and as she has had good friends, we've spent time with, she's grown up even back to preschool and all the way through elementary school with many of these friends, same friends, always in the community and in the same class, celebrating birthday parties, having dinner at their home, living life in community alongside them, and recognizing they're coming from a different culture perspective. Now, as she's gone into middle school, we've reflected, and I think you and I have talked about this some over the last few months, and I've talked about this with some of those dads, the difference in decision-making from when they went to school. One friend in particular, he went to middle school in India. And so for him, thinking through, what's this thought process for me that's different than the opportunity my daughter's being presented with? For him, there was no choice. It was one track. Even for his daughter now, the values alignment, it was different than the values alignment for us. And it was, as we've talked about making the grade and having the achievement or success based on academics that led her and led others to pursue a particular magnet middle school kind of academic program. Whereas for us, we looked at the community that we live in, and that was the higher priority for our family. So each family having their own different perspective, but it's helpful. It's helpful to think about that, to unpack that, to ask questions. And I've been able to have a good conversation with my friend about the decisions they're making and what they're thinking about, how they're processing. And he even came and asked me, he said, you've been in this county, you've been in the States longer. What do you think? How do you see this? What are the options that our kids have in front of them today?
But they did pull out, right? I think you told me the story. They did decide to go across town, yes, to the magnet. And so you can see, like, it is very hard to kind of fight that imprint, right? That academics is above all things, beyond community. So if you think about, like, the African proverb of, you know, you can go fast alone, but further together, it's almost like that doesn't exist in Asian culture.
So I want to make this a little more personal, or ask you a little more personal question. We talked about the academic side and school and grades and everything school-based, but step outside of school. You weren't allowed to do sleepovers, but how about going over to somebody else's house? And that, not just sitting down at the same cafeteria table together, but experiencing life inside the four walls of the home of somebody who grew up from a different cultural perspective than you did. Did you have any experiences like that growing up?
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's left a big imprint in my life as well. During, like, the sixth grade, seventh grade, and eighth grade years, which was, like, the middle school, there's so much growth for me at that time. Part of it also was, like, my parents bought their deli at the time. So they had to start becoming entrepreneurs and business owners, which was a huge challenge for them. But I think at some point, it was so hard for them to try to, like, contain me in that Korean structure that they were okay with, that eventually they just kind of had to let me go. So I remember one of those things was I stopped playing violin at sixth grade because I wanted to go out and play with my friends. And I think that was a hard challenge. But financially, I think it was a little bit more like provided them some relief because they didn't have to pay for violin lessons. Stress-wise, they didn't have to keep reminding me to play violin. And I think at the same time, my friends and the relationships that I had were starting to grow because it was no longer just the elementary schools around my block. Started to add other friends that were in the other parts of town. And so since the middle school was a little bit further away, and then just transportation back and forth from from school back then for me was walking. It's easier just for me to hang out with our friends in that neighborhood. There was actually one particular friend that I really grew fond of that was Jewish. And where I lived was a lot of Jewish friends in that area that I grew up with, elementary school as well. This particular friend, and we really got along together. We spent a lot of time. Mom was actually a teacher at the middle school too. And so we both just like had lunch in her classroom and we would just talk about the things that we enjoyed and we got along. And it got to the point where I think his mom would drop me off at home and intersect with my mom. And she asked my mom if I could spend the night at their house on the weekends. Partly was also because they lived far away. But since she was a teacher at the school, that's why she had brought her son to that school. But he didn't have a lot of friends locally in the neighborhood just because he was always being removed from his community, kind of like what you were sharing. And we spent a lot of time together, a lot of summers together, slept over. This is like when my sleepover started happening. And I remember slowly, like, I think his birthday was in May. So the first sleepover was like in May, right? So it's about 8 months after like school started. So I did a good job breaking my parents in, right? But like during the summers, we spend more time. And I do think like on the other side, my parents, like, it was convenient also to not have to look after me. I did have two younger siblings as well. They were like 7 years younger on average. So huge gap between like my life stage of being in around 12 years old versus my siblings are starting about elementary school. And so it was just easier for them to allow me to go. And what was great was I learned about like just Jewish custom. I would go to temple a lot. I would get a chance to like have, you know, lox and bagels after their services. We would enjoy like Hanukkah festivals together, you know, go to like bar mitzvahs together and stuff like that. So I felt like in a way it was great to kind of have that American type of a culture of sleepovers. But also at the same time, I felt like it was a paradigm of I didn't get really a Western or American culture as much of like a Jewish culture. And so when I look at that relationship and what it did was it built a bridge, though, in a way of what I had in one home culture to see another home culture that was drastically different. And in that culture also, like, he got to speak up. He got to have conversations with mom, sometimes arguments. So I was like, wow, like, how is that occurring? Because I would have that conversation at home, I'd be dead. I do remember as a kid being kicked out of the house many times, sleeping on the porch because of, like, you know, I talk back, which was maybe a word or two or a sentence at most. And so I think those are those areas that kind of open the paradigms and seeing like how the relational dynamics can occur between parents and their children, as well as how other people live lives in a way. Yeah, it's just one of those things that I felt like those middle school years, hey, having access to a lot of different people and finding those friends that kind of align, I think, maybe not so much with the same culture, but the same values that you had, being curious about each other and those relationships, what helped.
It's interesting thinking about not only your experience, but your parents' experience. And there's something about the parenting journey that from wherever your family of origin has brought you to this point, as the parent of a now almost teenager, it's a shift and your kids are starting to exercise their own personality while also exploring the world around them. And so you as a parent have to adapt and react to that. What kind of community connection beyond your friend's mom did your parents have in terms of their own personal relationships, friendships, community connections during that phase of your life?
The big strong part of a lot of Korean immigrants at the time was the church. And I don't think it was as much of a faith or a religious community. It was just where a lot of other Koreans got together and they went through the church like practices as a way. And I think a lot of them didn't know anything else either. So they just kind of, this is what you do as a Korean American. And this is where I go to find my network. And this is how I also have access to like figuring things out, so to speak. And so that was their community. But because where we lived, there weren't a lot of Koreans and the churches that we went to were kind of far away. Like I do recall around that age, we used to drive probably 45 minutes each way to just to go to church. And a lot of the Sunday evenings were their time to kind of go to a church friend's house and they would all hang out, have dinner together and talk. And then all the kids would get together upstairs and play in their rooms and play with the toys or whatever that they had at the time. But but I do recall that was their only source of information, that in the newspaper. So there's a little bit of a joke where like your mom will always come to you and say like, hey, you should do this because I read this in the newspaper. Back in the day when our parents were probably, or your parents might say like, hey, I saw this in the tabloids or something. So it's kind of like gossip true, so to speak. But it's just that was their community. Locally, not much. They owned a coffee shop and they learned how to do chit chat because they had to when they welcome customers and greet people. But literally they didn't have relationships with their customers that were more like friendships. It was just a straight business type of a transaction. Whereas from what I've seen in more Western culture, like you have loyal customers that are friends and you get to know each other and you ask about like, hey, how's little Johnny doing? And how's Christy doing? You know, how are they doing at school? There's a little pinch personal interest in it, but I don't think it was one of those things that my parents knew how to do or to create a relationship in that way.
It's interesting that you say that because my parents had similar experiences. We had a few neighbors right around us, but for the most part, the connections happened through the church. And that was more about going and for my parents, serving and volunteering in some way, less about friendship and community and bridge building. And so I think as I look back through the rest of my middle school, high school journey, there were those individuals who my parents got to know, my dad's coworkers, as his coworkers became more diverse, as the company was bringing in contractors from multiple Asian countries, he would have stories about their culture and the conversations they would have at work. My mom taught English as a second language, primarily to first generation Asian immigrants into our community. So we would talk about their stories, but there was still kind of a distance. It didn't really feel like it was an integral part. It wasn't up close. One of the things I wrote about in the New Generation Leader was the few couple times I have distinct memories of sitting down for a meal at the home of someone whose culture, whose background was different than me. Not meeting at a restaurant, not meeting at church, but in their home at their kitchen table, eating and following their customs and habits and own family rhythms. And so I didn't have a lot of that experience through middle school. And I remember looking ahead in that journey into high school. That was where I kind of was most insulated. And that was the part of my educational journey where I feel like I was most attuned to there's me and there's people from other backgrounds. And that was probably the greatest distance for me because by the end of high school, I was having purposefully and intentionally more cross-cultural interactions throughout our community, throughout the world, doing that more intentionally. But at the end of middle school and into high school, I was seeing the difference and not at all thinking about the bridge building. And we had an experience just last week at a middle school. The school had a sporting event, and the other team from the other side of the county has a very different demographic makeup than the school my daughter goes to. Not very different. You see the difference when you put these two teams next to each other. And there were cultural distinctive dynamics coming out from the cheerleaders of the other school that just looked different. And so you could read it on the faces of the middle schoolers paying attention, and it was going both ways. They were looking at each other thinking, what are you doing over there? Both ways. And so I think that's something that in the 21st century now, in the world we live in, especially in this, our community, I have to imagine it's to some extent present in your community and in other communities as well. We have more global awareness because of advances in media and technology. That doesn't make it personal, but we're at least more aware. And through that awareness, we have an eye towards being more intentional with discussion and dialogue about what did you notice with my daughter about that experience at the football game? What did you see? What did you notice? What stood out to you? What would you be curious about if you were to meet one of those cheerleaders and have a conversation, ask them, explore? All of those kinds of things, I feel like, come to mind for us. Not necessarily that we're perfect at doing them, but at least we are thinking in that way. Whereas I didn't have even an environment to have that experience, much less to reflect on that experience when I was that age.
Yeah, I kind of feel like when I was growing up, I wanted to be invited to something that I felt like everybody had a chance to enjoy and explore, but there wasn't a space or maybe an invitation to do so. Maybe I didn't need an invitation, so I didn't step in. But at the same time, I felt so different. And for like my daughter, as I think as she gets into junior high school and is going to have a whole slew of more people that she has to engage with, and then let alone all the physiological changes with hormones and puberty and having to deal with that at the same time, it creates for us a landscape that's constantly shifting. But as a father, I think I'm trying to be keen on to not perpetuate what my parents did with me, because those times are actually different from today's times. But I think applicationally, though, similarly, is how do you engage with your community a lot more intentionally and actually build an opportunity for her to feel included and see what is around her so she can engage and allow her to not feel like she was lacking any type of experience that she might have wanted growing up.
As I look around the landscape of our region, there's much more of an eye from many different cultural backgrounds to celebrate publicly a food festival, a cultural festival that's much more accessible today than it ever was in the years when we were growing up.
You know, and I see a lot of companies, they have that, right? You'll see, you might have in your office Asian Heritage Month celebration, or there's a Black History Month, there's Hispanic Month, we just finished Filipino Month. And I think there's a lot of times when people are confused, like, why do we need that? Why isn't there like Italian American Month or like all these other ones? And I'm not saying that those aren't necessary. But I think in order for people to really create a space for those that may not be familiar with it, the different type of cultures that you're not used to, that typically aren't played out in media, typically might not have been a common exposure for most people that have grown up, it provides a little bit of a curiosity factor that it's not so foreign that you're starting up conversations from scratch, or you may feel awkward because you're ignorant too. But if you can lean into some of those, and even I do, because like some of those other cultures I'm not familiar with, it provides that ability to build those bridges. And wherever I want to become a leader, I know how to practice the ability to have conversations, practice curiosity, and allow myself to allow other people to bring their full selves into the conversation as well, and allow those differences to not necessarily always be seen as a challenge because I don't understand it or I don't know where they're coming from, but it's an opportunity for me to grow, to say there are different people that solve problems in a different way, and maybe there's elements of those that we can apply to and allow to have a more robust solution that not only caters to the majority of the crowd, can also be more inclusive to some of the people that are in the fringes.
What would you say to people who might be curious but aren't wired the way you're wired to walk up to a stranger and strike up a conversation?
Well, even though I'm wired that way, it doesn't make it all any easier. But I think just the humility to share your intent and just to be able to come with a posture of like, I want to know, is great. So I always tell people that's a great thing for you to say. To say, hey, I don't know anything about your culture and I'm sorry, but I'm curious, would you give me like 5 minutes to help me to understand some of these things that I don't know? And coming with that posture sounds like you are someone with a growth mindset. You're someone that the other person probably wants to spend more time with. And you're somebody that they would probably want to follow versus someone that just doesn't want to know, doesn't care to know, and doesn't see the relevancy of it. And not just even being open to seeing, could there be something that is beneficial for mutually to be able to share?
One of the challenges I feel like exists in that curiosity is sometimes a posture on the other side of the conversation that tends to feel closed off to that inquiry, because you should know something about my story. You should know something already about my background, my experience, because it's one of the big three or big four. Not saying there are only four. The challenge, though, is look simply at the number of countries around the world. You're already at nearly 200 different variations purely by country. And then you break down regions and geographies and religions and faiths and language differences. Well, now you're exponentially growing. So how do we keep building that bridge, as we've talked about, on both sides wanting to build the bridge, when there might be a hesitancy of someone who's from a different background than us?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting when you bring it up that way, at least for Asians, right? You look at the world population and China and India are like the one and two populous countries of the world. In a way, numerically, we can say like non-Asians are the minority in the world. However, to have the posture to say that I want to learn and maybe take ownership of that and not let the one person that you talk to come off that maybe there is a hesitancy. Realistically, for most Asians, they probably don't want to share because they haven't had permission to do so. And culturally, they also feel hierarchically they're on the lower caste in a way, or a lower class, just because we are a minority. Don't take their deference and desire to respect that distance as also a way to like be worried about what advantage, but continue to persist to be curious. And YouTube has a lot of different videos that also introduce you to some of these things. I think they're great ways to kind of do some homework before you do, but I don't think it should replace the human component of having a dialogue with someone and even sharing what you've learned and what you think it is, but allowing an expert in that field to provide you their own perspective of some of those things and how much of it is actually true, or realize that, hey, maybe not all Chinese people are very similar in that way, and allow other people to tell their own story.
Our friend, Dr. Blackburn, I watched an introduction to her series on LinkedIn talking about Asian culture, and the introduction alone was eye-opening for me. After as many conversations as we've had, I still learn. And so as we talk about for leaders and those of us developing our skills, for all of us, it's a lifelong journey of growth and development. We want to continue learning, and we can't ever know all of it because there's just so much in our world to know. No one of us can know it all. And so to be curious, to ask questions, to explore. And I've always said, let's sit down at the table, because at a table, we can have a conversation over a meal where we become peers. We're sharing the very same meal at the same place at the same time. And that's a great place to start that journey of discovery, asking good questions, being curious, and answering the questions that come from the other side of the table so that it is truly a two-way street.
Yeah, it can seem overwhelming, even though you may never tackle it at all. That's not the goal. The goal is by being curious and taking one step at a time that it makes us better. It's not, your goal is not to make the other person better, but you become better by taking little steps to be able to introduce yourself to different thoughts, different ideas, different people, and learning to have those communication patterns to understand. And yeah, Dr. Blackburn's LinkedIn learning series that she has on understanding how to even work with Asians or lead Asians in the workplace, fabulous story. And it's just probably one of the most gracious ways to not watch it and feel like interrogated that you're doing everything wrong, but it really comes from a posture of wanting to build a bridge for you. So highly recommended. And I'm sure you'll put a link in the show notes for that as well.
Absolutely. We'll link to that in the show notes at newgenerationleader.fm. Well, the middle school years are awkward. They're uncomfortable. They're not fun for anyone, but thanks for sharing a little bit of your story and experience through that season of life. And I hope as you reflect on how to ask good questions, who you need to reach out to, what that looks like to start a discussion and a dialogue, that you'll see somebody in your life, in your world, who you can ask a question of, whether it's at school, at work, in your neighborhood, at the store, somewhere in your life. We hope you'll ask a good question, start a conversation and dialogue, and be curious about the world around you. Well, thanks, Jim. We'll see you when we dive into the next chapter of this story on our Allyship channel.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the New Generation Leader podcast. Subscribe today on your podcasting platform. Download the show notes and unlock your true leadership potential at newgenerationleader.fm. Thanks for listening today, and we look forward to seeing you next time on the New Generation Leader podcast.
Thanks again for listening to today's show. Don't forget to check out the New Generation Leader gift guide at newgenerationleader.fm/gift. Thanks to Brian, Jim, Jay, and the team behind the scenes. We'll see you next time on the New Generation Leader podcast.